This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, the Justice Department says immigrants can be imprisoned indefinitely, and two big names in American politics eke their way into presidential bids. Joining us in our New York bureau is John McWhorter, Manhattan Institute Senior Fellow in Public Policy, along with E.R. Shipp, Lawrence Stessen, Distinguished Professor in Journalism at Hofstra University School of Communication. Plus, we've got Nat Irvin, the President of Future Focus 2020 and Professor at the Babcock Graduate School of Management of Wake Forest University. He's at member station WFDD in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Welcome, everybody, and let's talk the presidency. Oh, it seems just like it was a week ago when we were talking about the 2006 election. Now we're on to 2008. And so two big names are getting their presidential acts together. Over the weekend, John McCain announced that he's forming an exploratory committee. He's a senator, of course, and former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani confirmed that he will do the same. Now, Republican strategist Scott Reed told CNN that although Giuliani's name carries a lot of weight, his moderate views could get him his voters. We were waiting for a little bit of tape from Giuliani, but we don't have it right now, so we're going to move right along. Basically, some people consider Rudy Giuliani someone who is a moderate. Other people say that he's got a bad record on race relations. He's not actually a moderate. He's a conservative. It depends on how you look at it, whether you look at the issue of abortion, whether you look at the issue of race relations. Nat, is he what we should call a moderate?
Well, I think, Farai, it depends on what the question is. If you were to think about Giuliani when it comes to the South, I'd say that he has a problem. He's considered to be, as the genre would say today, a San Francisco liberal. He's considered to be, I think, outside of New York. There are a couple of things that people think about. One, he's considered to be a person who can demonstrate competency in terms of crises. So if the country becomes more concerned with how effective government becomes, then Giuliani becomes somebody who's attractive. But if we continue to fight cultural wars or we get more into this theology kind of debate, then the question is going to become, what does Giuliani think about, for example, the issue of gay marriage? North Carolina Baptist here just a couple of days ago re-clarified their opposition to gay marriage. So I doubt very seriously that Mr. Giuliani would be able to do very well in North Carolina or South Carolina when it comes to a question of values.
John, I mean, does he fall into a category? I mean, McCain and Giuliani are both people who don't necessarily break down into traditional Republican categories. McCain challenged the president on issues of torture. Giuliani is someone who is a very, very much a social liberal, or at least a social moderate. How are these two men going to negotiate issues within their own party?
Well, the way I see it is that Giuliani certainly fits into that big tent conception of what a Republican is. But there's simply no chance in terms of the sort of people who actually vote, particularly in primaries. His views on guns, on gay marriage, and on abortion simply wouldn't pass. And what we also have to remember is that the man is utter and complete poison among a certain segment of Democrats or left-leaning people. I remember being at a very blue America party a couple of years ago here in New York, and the minute that man's name came up, the gleeful smirks of contempt that came on the faces of everybody in that room, who then went and listed off all the unpleasant little things they remembered him doing during certain bad old days in New York before 9/11. There's no way the smear machine from the left would leave him squashed like a bug. It's impossible.
It doesn't actually require smearing, just basically focusing on the facts, I think.
Subtle point.
Giuliani on September 10th, 2001, was kind of, well, he was just persona non grata in a lot of circles here in New York. 9/11 gave him, out of that tragedy, a second chance. It worked effectively nationally and to some extent internationally. But after that period, New Yorkers started remembering the Giuliani of September 10th, 2001. And it's not a very pleasant picture. He he made some dumb decisions. In fact, he built the command center for crisis management on a high floor in the World Trade Center. Who would do something like that? But he also had bad relations with people of color. He had bad relations with people representing the poor, with immigrants. So that was on that side. On the other issues you've mentioned so far, on abortion, on gay rights, he would have a hard time really appealing to the Republican voters once they look at his record and get beyond the PR of September 11.
What about black voters?
Black voters would be a mixed bag. There are some blacks who stood by him, still stand by him. But overall, he does not have a good record among black people in New York City.
Abner Louima, a woman I talked to in a high position who said that during Giuliani's administration, she was afraid to walk down the street with a black man because of what the police might do. Overall, there's no way that he would.
What about black men walking down the street, let alone people walking down the street with black men?
Yeah. And so I don't think that he could be considered a cuddly figure among
But what he can do out of all this is to further raise his profile for his consulting firm. So he will do well. He will raise some money in this exploratory phase, so-called. But he will basically raise money for his consulting firm.
Let's move along to the topic of Al Jazeera International. It's an English language version of the Qatar-based network. Launches worldwide today, and it's going to be the first English language international news channel based in the U.S. in the Middle East. They've hired some amazing talent from around the world. David Frost of the BBC. They've hired people from ABC News. They've got a very international cast and people posted in Kenya and all over the place. But, of course, the Arabic service has been denounced by many, including former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, as propaganda. Let's take a listen to something that Nigel Parsons, who is the managing editor, has to say about the challenges they face.
We don't have horns and forked tails and cloven feet. This is a long-term project. We're confident we'll get there in the end.
All right. Horns, forked tails, cloven feet, apparently an assessment of what some people think about Al Jazeera. John, I mean, would you watch it? What do you think?
I would take a look, and I think a lot of people should, because it'll be interesting to see Al Jazeera in a language that we understand, because the answers in the Middle East are not easy. But I think that because very few of us who are not of Arabic-speaking descent have any comprehension of Arabic, a great deal is said in that part of the world, including on Al Jazeera and other stations, that we can't understand. And I think in our not being able to understand what the people say, it often leads to a misimpression that we're dealing with people who are kind of, you know, very always coherently aggrieved kind of Che Guevara's, people who are thinking about what the old CIA did in Chile and things like that. There is a certain visceral, implacable element to the anti-Americanism there. And this was before what happened in Iraq. And it's something that has to be grappled with. And I would like if we could hear some of it delivered in Oxonian English, because I think it would give some people more of a purchase on the truly virulent, implacable kind of hatred, even in ordinary households, that we're dealing with in trying to figure out what to do with our relationship with the Middle East.
ER?
I look forward to this. I've actually been watching or monitoring Al Jazeera online for quite some time, and I require my students to follow also, so we can get a different perspective on some of the issues we're trying to grapple with here. So I welcome them to the table. We will see what they bring to that table, whether it is propaganda. They might argue that some of the things that the United States does over Voice of America and other outlets is also propaganda, but the more the merrier. I think people in the United States, given all the freedom we have to know what is going on in the world, need to use that freedom and not just sit back and wait for some canned, packaged news weekly or news nightly program, but should actually go out and do some research. We've got all these computers. We've got all access to internet. Let's go out and figure out what's going on in the world and make some really informed decisions about that so we can see what it does. I check out all kinds of stuff. I even checked out Al Gore's cable station. I don't understand it. It's called Currents, I believe. And it's targeted
TV,
for a younger
yeah.
demographic, but I don't have a clue what it's about.
Well, it's supposed to be about citizen journalism, people submitting their own video.
Yeah. So
but
again.
But we're none of us are in the demo. I think I can speak with assurance here. So, Nat, I mean,
I agree John and ER. I would welcome it. In fact, I can tell you this. You can know one of the first questions for the 2008 campaign is you can hear somebody saying, are you one of those Al Jazeera watching left-wing liberal Islamofascist watching politicians?
Someone's going to quote you directly on that.
Oh, that's
well,
right
I didn't get it exactly. I didn't get it exactly right, but you guys get the point. Here's what I think is valuable, and I think our two colleagues have already mentioned it. But just demographically, you know, 2025, the estimates are that 30% of the world will become Muslim, and here it is that America is thinking that somehow or another that we're going to ignore this part of the world or this particular identity. We can't. In fact, if we had known more, perhaps we wouldn't be in the mess that we're in now in Iraq. I have, as ER mentioned, I've watched Link television. I'm all the time trying to find different perspectives on the world. And that's because, as my friend Bill Raspberry used to say, because somebody disagrees with me doesn't necessarily mean that he's a damn fool. And, you know, when you can come up, when you can see how other people are watching the world, what you're saying, I think it makes all of us make better decisions. Right now, our president has convinced that he'll do what he wants to do, even if the only two people who agrees with him happens to be Barney, his dog, and his wife, Laura. Okay.
Yeah, well, you know, I think
okay.
I just should mention that Link TV, which you mentioned, is only available mm-hmm. on certain
online.
Systems. It's
yeah.
it's available mainly on DSL, not DSL, DirecTV, and then also mm-hmm. online. And the same thing is mm-hmm. true for Al Jazeera. So very few people
right.
are actually going to see this. But I want to move along to another important topic. The Bush administration announced this week that immigrants arrested in the U.S. can be held indefinitely on suspicion of terrorism. They can't challenge the imprisonment. There have been kids who got caught up in the detainee system, you know, kids who've crossed borders or sometimes even traveled by plane from Africa and Europe, caught up in you know, staying, say, 3 years in detention centers. Now, this opens a new legal front in the fight over the rights of detainees, as well as immigrants who are coming for economic reasons. Do we think it's wise, ER, to put a no time limit on evaluating immigrants and detainees?
Well, I think the no time limit is the issue here. There should be some kind of oversight. There should be some kind of restrictions placed on how long you can detain someone while determining whether they are indeed terrorists. But that's the key word here, is terrorists and terrorism. The fact that they're being detained is not necessarily because they are trying to enter the country illegally. It's because they supposedly are suspected of being terrorists or somehow involved with terrorists. So as we're sorting out all of this stuff, I think we need to keep in mind that these are kind of two separate issues, whether we're dealing with people who are coming into the country illegally, period, or whether we're dealing with the terrorism issue. In either case, there should be some kind of systems put into place to determine how fast we can get them out of detention.
It seems to me that
go ahead.
Obviously, if there's some justification for this one, I imagine that it gets down to some legal arcana that I'm not in a position to judge at this point. And I think it's certainly true, as Nat said, that we have to get past the idea that somebody who disagrees with you is necessarily a damn fool. But in this case, until more facts are available to me, it's difficult for me to see how extending these already difficult and indefensible policies of indefinite detainment and not being able to appeal it while you're there. It seems to me that anybody who would agree with this or put this forth the way I'm aware of it this morning is someone who has never read a book and does not have the moral authority to raise children. I don't get it. However, maybe the people who have come up with this are not damned fools. We should keep our minds open, I suppose.
Does this hold up to American ideals of
No, it doesn't, Farai. That's exactly the point.
So.
I mean, this is, we're talking about holding, we're talking about actually, in the assumption is that everybody who this law is applied to are terrorists. But we're talking about legal residents, not citizens always, okay? Legal residents, people who are here who are immigrants, who are here for whatever reason, but that now the writ of habeas corpus doesn't apply to them. See, you know, it's part of the American DNA that says if the government, if any government in the world should happen to hold a person who is suspected of having done something wrong, that there should be some way for that person to be able to say, hey, I didn't do it. And there should be some way that the court system in that country, and especially America, that they'd be able to say, listen, I'm the wrong person. I'm not the guy you think I am. I'm not the one who did this. And that there should be some way to address this publicly. Even the Nuremberg trials, we had this. And so it fundamentally strikes, I think, at the core of the DNA of what Americans believe, not only about our own country, but what we believe about humanity. And the fact that we have just drifted toward this almost without discussion is an amazing revelation about how fearful we have been about terrorism. We've got to fight terrorism. I agree with it. But come on, we got to have some sense about the history of our country and what do we believe for the future of this country.
D.R., briefly.
It can't just be just like, you know, whatever the president says, that's it.
I think what we've seen is what Nat is alluding to, that we've given up a lot since 2001 without having a public discussion of why we're really giving up those rights.
All right. That'll be the last word. E.R. Shipp, Lawrence Stetson, Distinguished Professor in Journalism at Hofstra University School of Communication, John McWhorter of the Manhattan Institute. He's a Senior Fellow in Public Policy, and Nat Ervin, President of Future Focus 2020. Thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you.
And as always, if you'd like to comment on any of the topics we've heard on the roundtable, you can call us at 202-408-3330. That's 202-408-3330. Or you can send an email. Just log on to npr.org and click on Contact Us. And please be sure to tell us where you're writing from and how to pronounce your name, because you know we love doing letters on Thursdays.